You are now tuned into anything potable. The most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital. Like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through.
Welcome to
Anything is Potable!
The Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, and I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King. Ladies and gentlemen, and we are coming to you after the Celtics take Game 7 from the Milwaukee Bucks. They beat them 109-81 in what will forever be known as the Grant Williams game. I believe it was on the five-year anniversary of the Kelly Olynyk game. I think Grant Williams out Kelly Olynyk. Kelly Olynyk, Grant was absolutely phenomenal from three-point land. The Bucks basically begged him to shoot, and shoot he did, just attempting, I think it was 18 threes in this game. Jay, or like, was that had to be the most shocking thing to come from this game seven?
It was wild, but also the way that the Bucks played defense against him, it made sense.
He didn't shoot enough threes. He in fact started the game, made one and then missed a couple and passed one up and then got a very stern talking to from Ime Udoka. And he ended up with 18 attempts.
And I'll tell you what, the Bucks basically decided, okay, Grant Williams has missed threes for basically three games. He looked a little gun shy during game six. And they decided Brook Lopez will guard him. Brook Lopez will take away everything at the rim, which he did, by the way. That part of the plan worked. And for a while, it looked like Grant wouldn't make enough shots to punish them for that. And like the first quarter was ugly for the Celtics. They were probably lucky to be down six at the end of the first quarter. Grant Williams and Derek White were taking all of their shots, which isn't very good. But they just kept working it and working it. And then Grant never lost confidence. Or maybe if he did lose confidence, he just got it back. He just shot through it. And eventually they all went down. But really, I mean, the defense was special again. Like, that was just a powerhouse defensive series by the Celtics to limit Giannis, of all people, to the percentages that he shot. He had fewer points than field goal attempts, which is unbelievable. The second half, 4-for-16 from the field, just 8 points. Like, their defense was just so locked in. And as much as Grant Williams deserves credit for making seven threes, which I believe was more than the entire Bucks roster,
Oh, yeah, they were 4-of-33, so just a huge disparity there just between Grant and the Bucks. The Celtics, on top of Grant's seven threes, had the other players on the teams had 15 of their own, including 4 from Peyton Pritchard in the fourth quarter, which I think, Jay King, you predicted in our last podcast might happen.
Didn't you predict Grant Tatum game?
No, I went with the big Derek White game, so I can't say I won that one.
He almost made 2 out of his 10 shots.
He knocked down one very big three in the moment. But you're right, the defense was the major story here, holding the Bucks to 81 points total. But really, in the second, third, and fourth quarter, it was just dominant. 17 points in the second quarter, only 21 in the third, 17 again in the fourth. And the Bucks really didn't have an answer. And it felt like finally just the exhaustion of trying to go against this Celtics team caught up to Giannis in the second half, because he was just, after just an absurd just first half from him where he put up a casual 17, 12, and 7. He was just not the same player in the second half, just not taking nearly as many shots, missing some. He smoked a couple of bunnies there. He was 4-of-16 in the second half, only scored 8 points. And other than Drew Holiday driving and making some plays by himself, the Bucks really just didn't have an answer. And they only made 4 threes in the entire game, 1 of 14 for them in the second half. Like, it just allowed the Celtics to really pack the paint and make Giannis's life extremely difficult. And the Bucks just really couldn't do anything in the second half.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, Ime Udoka thought that the cumulative effect of the way they played Giannis for the whole series kind of grinded them down in the second half of game seven. And I think that might be at least partially true. Like, they decided early on they were going to play Giannis one-on-one a lot. And obviously they're going to help out and try to make things as difficult as possible for him during those one-on-one opportunities. But they also just wanted to turn him into a scorer, make him work, and take away everybody else. And, you know, the 4 for 33 from threes is just ridiculous. They were able to completely shut off the arc while also limiting Giannis's efficiency. And that's like, normally you have to choose one, right? Like, you're either going to stop Giannis, or they didn't stop Giannis. He averaged 35 points a game or whatever it was during the series.
He had the most historic, like, first player to have 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 50 assists.
Yeah, he ended up with 25, 20, and 9. Like, he was ridiculous this series. But they were able to limit his efficiency. They were able to keep him to below, like, basically, I didn't look at the numbers after game seven for the series, but right around 45% from the field for the series, which for him is ice cold. And they were also able to limit everybody else. Like, there was never a Wes Matthews game in this series. There was never a Grayson Allen game in the series. Like, Pat Connaughton was really good most of the series. But there was, like, the supporting cast, the Celtics never really let those guys get going. And to do that while limiting, yeah, like, that's just so tough. And it just shows just how good defensively the Celtics were during the series. Obviously, if Chris Middleton plays, that would have been a lot more difficult to pull off. But still, like, what they were able to do to the Bucks and how they were able to limit Giannis's efficiency just a bit. It really, really was impressive.
Yeah. And I mean, like, obviously losing Middleton for the Bucks, like, that you slow down Giannis. They didn't have that many players out there. We saw George Hill get a lot of minutes since he came back for injury. We saw just way too many minutes for Grayson Allen. There were just not a lot of solutions out there for the Bucks, it felt like, in that second half. And this game, like, obviously you have to give credit to the Bucks and Giannis for forcing this to seven games. But this is, like, kind of what I expected more so heading into the series, just because I felt like the Celtics, if they didn't turn the ball over, really, because their defense was so dominant and because they held the Bucks to pretty much like under 100 in most of the games, I thought they would have that advantage. If they don't cough up that one in game five, I don't think this should have gone seven. But you have to give the Celtics for credit for all. You have to shame them initially for coughing up game five and completely choking that away, because that was a giant choke. That, like, objectively, that was an awful, awful game to lose. But to come back from that, win a huge game six on the road behind Jason Tatum, and then just come out and be dominant in game seven, it just shows a lot of will, and just, like, they were able to come together and do the right thing. And the wild thing is, like, I just went back and rewatched the second half. The Celtics came out in the third quarter, knocked down a couple threes, and basically just were in control the rest of the game. The Bucks didn't really make this game close after, like, 2 minutes went by in the third quarter. It was kind of like, it was definitely nerve-wracking there as a Celtics fan, because you just, like, knew what, like, you had kind of had game five looming. But really, as soon as the Celtics came out and pushed that lead to about 12 in the first 2 minutes of the third quarter, they just dominated the rest of the game.
Yeah. And you know, obviously when Tatum went out with his fourth foul with, it was like midway through the third quarter. I forget exactly how much time was left.
7:44.
Yeah. And
they were up 10.
And that could have been trouble time. Like, that was a big call. That was, it wiped away what would have been an and one, gave him his fourth, took away, like, the Celtics were really in charge then, but it could have gone the other way at that point. And I thought the defense was just so sharp, even while he was on the bench. And, you know, by the time he got back in, they'd actually added to the lead. And he was out for a while. He was out for a pretty extended stretch. Celtics.
He was out for the rest of the quarter.
Yeah, Celtics went 1-for-6 at one point during that stretch, and the Bucks still couldn't get any closer. And I think Jrue Holiday made a bunch of shots to kind of keep the Bucks within like 12 point range to make it so that they weren't completely out of the game during the third quarter. But even after Tatum went down, like, the Celtics still didn't give up any ground. And I felt like the Bucks, that was their last chance. And once they didn't get any closer there, like, going into the fourth, it was basically over, even though game five, you know, you don't really want to say that. But it just felt like if they were going to make a push, that was when it would have come.
Yeah. I mean, that was also, it was hard for anyone to get in the flow of that game because Kane Fitzgerald was having a moment there. I think he called 5 offensive fouls in a row on what felt like 5 straight possessions. And then just like the wettest floor in the league. What was going on with the floor tonight? We had floor delays for pretty much the entire game. It was ridiculous.
I don't know, but
you don't have the answers for that? Come on.
How insane do you think it was insane for the Bucks to just be like, Grant Williams, you're a 41% 3-point shooter. You can just be as open as you want.
I don't think it was that crazy because if you are going to pick the guy on the on the Celtics starting lineup who you want to beat you, I feel like that is what you.
But he's a 41%. Like he was the 16th best 3-point shooter by percentage in the entire league this year.
Yeah, but he only shot 39% from 3 tonight. So it feels like the Bucks may have done their job.
I'm just saying, I get like wanting to make one of the Celtics supporting cast guys beat you. But why Grant? Like, and it could have gone the other way. Like there was a point he was 2-for-7 and he was at risk of shooting them out of the game. Like honestly. And in a game 7, all it takes is one bad game for the strategy to work.
But if you think about it, like look at the starting lineup, like they had Al Horford kind of beat them in game 4, like that's who they picked. Is your other option is going maybe letting Marcus Smart take a bunch of shots?
What if they had put Brooke Lopez on Marcus Smart?
That's the only other
like, that would have been interesting
solution. But then you're basically pulling Brooke Lopez completely away from the rim. And that's where I like in the first quarter, the Celtics they're only in the game because they made basically 5 threes, but they were not shooting that well from deep. And I thought the Celtics like kept on challenging Giannis and Brooke Lopez at the rim and it was not going well for them. And so like, I kind of like get the decision of trying to keep those guys closer to the paint. But I think that's just kind of like the matchup issues that they had this series because we saw in games, I think 5 and 6, they really went away from Brooke Lopez. They put Bobby Portis in there to try to get just like a rangier guy who's not as can kind of cover the corners more. We saw some lineups with Giannis at the 5. And I think that just because of the Bucks' lack of wing depth, that really makes them vulnerable to Jason Tatum playing against George Hill and Grayson Allen. And so it's kind of a calculation. It's like, okay, do we want to let Grant Williams shoot or do we want to like just make sure we get the ball out of Jason Tatum's hands? And like, if I'm having to make a choice there, I feel like you if you're the Bucks, you choose Grant Williams every time. And you know what? If you honestly, if you went into this game and said Grant Williams is going to take 18 threes, I feel like you probably not thought that was going to go well for the Celtics.
Yeah, and I think that's partly – that's the difference between the Bucks defense and the Celtics defense, is that the Bucks felt like they needed to give up something to take away all the things they wanted to take away. And the Celtics decided – or they didn't have to make that sacrifice. You know, like they were able – to pack the paint on Giannis and still hold the Bucks to 4 made three-pointers. And so I just feel like the versatility of the Celtics defense was really the difference, because the Bucks defense is awesome. Like, Brook Lopez is spectacular at what he does. He's a force in the paint. But they just decided basically they couldn't take everything away and they were going to give up Grant Williams threes. And like, it's kind of crazy to try that, but also I guess it was just the risk. They were betting that Grant wouldn't be able to shoot his way through it, but he did, and he had that confidence. And but yeah, that was like the Bucks. They are great at what they do. But if you force them out of that, they didn't have the perfect response. And the Celtics just didn't have to give up enough, to give up as much. And that was really the difference in the series. After game five, I mean, that could have broken the Celtics. Like, that was...
It almost broke Marcus Smart. He didn't sleep at all.
he should never sleep again. That was a horrible loss. Smart, by the way, another... He didn't shoot well, but 10 assists, 2 turnovers, like just another really solid game for Marcus Smart. I thought he did what the Celtics needed him to do. Game 6 and game 7, just a great response from him after a really rough couple minutes down the stretch of game 5. But I think the last couple of games just showed the Celtics' growth, where to beat that team on the road just takes a lot. To run them over in game 7 takes a lot. And this felt more like a series of survival than like actually winning. Like, you just got to escape it. And the Bucks, like, they were championship tested team. And every time the Celtics offense got impatient, it seemed like the Bucks just capitalized on it. But whenever the Celtics like stayed with it, and by the end I felt like they were staying with it more and more often, they were able to get pretty good shots and allow their defense to just be really, really strong in the half court.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called 6 Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out 6 pop culture themed trophies for 6 basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make 6 Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow 6 Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Yeah, they like second half, they only have 4 turnovers. I feel like they came out early and kind of struggled with that regard, and the Bucks, as the Bucks do, would make them pay. But it felt like they had the winning formula the whole series. It was just like, the defense showed up every single time, but it's just like, as long as they were not rushed and played like deliberate offense, made the extra pass, they were able to come out and kind of put themselves in a position to win, whether even if it was in game three, they kind of melted away in game five and then just really dominated in game six and seven. The only other thing I can talk about in this game is, Peyton Pritchard. Peyton Pritchard just had not shot the ball well for pretty much the entire series.
I wonder who could have seen that coming.
Only a wise man who's been covering this Boston Celtics team for a decade now maybe would have predicted that. But did you predict Peyton Pritchard knocking down a three and then screaming at the bench, "This is what I do"? Did you see that celebration in your prediction,
though? I feel like that's something we would have predicted in the season preview we do with Corrales, when we just say stupid things that won't ever happen. Like that was an awesome moment. And to his credit, it is what he does.
That is his main thing, knocking down threes.
The man knocks down threes. And I feel like he has a tendency, maybe it's just because he plays at the beginning of the fourth quarter a lot of the time, but I feel like a lot of the time as the Celtics are like beginning to pull away, Pritchard hits a bunch of shots. Is that right? Am I just
I feel like he does hit shots in bunches. Like I feel like if he hits one, he normally hits like two out of his next three. I feel like he always hits like three or four in a row. And so maybe that's adding to the Celtics pulling away, but he definitely feels like a little bit of a streaky shooter in that regard. But as soon as he hit his third three, I think the step back, that's when the game was like immediately over. That's when I like was able to relax a little bit. Did you happen to catch the scene on Causeway Street after the game?
I saw a video of it. I'll tell you what, I caught the scene on Causeway Street like 2 hours before the game. And even then there was just a juice that Boston rarely has. Yeah, I think everyone knew, because this was a second round game seven, but it was the winner like had a really, whoever won had a pretty good chance of winning the finals, and the Celtics now have a pretty good chance of winning the finals. Like that was how big that game was today, and I think Celtics fans seem to recognize that.
Oh, absolutely. There's a definite like walking into the building, I think like 45 minutes beforehand, it's kind of like a definitely an energy, a calm, kind of like a little bit of nervousness, a little bit of excitement. After the game, that's the most like the Causeway Street was completely shut down. People partying in the streets. A man in an Al Horford jersey jumped up onto a street sign and was partying, which I don't think Al would approve of.
How do you party on a street sign?
He was just like, there's a Yankee suck chance.
Was he standing on top of the street sign? Was he hanging from the street sign?
Basically he was standing on something that basically is like, it read Causeway Street and then this man's jersey. And there was just, it was just bedlam in the crowd. It looked like the Deer District or like all those outdoor things, but it was just like an unplanned thing outside Causeway Street. It was more than I expected, but like deservedly so, as you mentioned, because like this series felt like it was such a test and it was taking down the defending champs and I think just like objectively the best player in the NBA right now. And so I think Celtics fans deserve to kind of like have that bit of a celebration. The wild thing is, though, they're starting the Eastern Conference Finals in 2 days. They got game one against the Miami Heat in Miami on Tuesday, That is a quick turnaround, and Robert Williams was back today, but he did not play, so that's not a great sign for his health. There was a report out there from Joe Sway that maybe he saw Marcus Smart leaving the arena in a walking boot. I have no idea what to think of that, but as much as this is a huge win for the Celtics, they got another very difficult series coming up starting Tuesday night in Miami.
Yeah, and that will be a lot too. I feel like the Celtics needed parts of this series, like the you can learn from a series like that. Just the patience it requires and the willingness to stick with the game plan, especially offensively. Defensively, Celtics are usually pretty great. But offensively, like, they can have hiccups. They can have moments where they try some bullshit, to put it very analytically. And I just feel like the last couple of games forced them to reach a level of, like, just detail that they haven't always been able to reach. And I think back, I mean, the series 2 seasons ago against Miami, same Miami team they're about to play, is probably the best example of that, right? Like, the Celtics were in every game in the fourth quarter, I think leading like 5 out of the 6 games in that series in the fourth quarter. It was ridiculous. And just kind of crumbled down the stretch of every game, just didn't have enough of in every game. And I just feel like they're more prepared for that now. They're more ready to handle that, and the physicality. Like, Giannis is so physical that they're gonna see Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and be like, these little children. But I'll tell you what, that Heat defense is no joke, man. Like, to have PJ Tucker, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Kyle Lowry all on the same team is just a lot. And they're a lot different from Milwaukee, because Milwaukee, there was always like somewhere you knew you could go for, like, today it was Grant Williams. In some previous games, there's Al Horford. Like, you knew you could go to a certain thing to get a shot. Maybe it wasn't the best shot, but it was at least a shot. Miami is going to be like a lot of switch everything. Bam Adebayo can switch on to point guards even. It's just going to be a different series in the way that the Celtics need to attack. So it'll be interesting to see how they try to solve the different problems that the Heat pose versus, you know, having Brook Lopez and Giannis at the rim, but not as much versatility like the Bucks had.
Yeah, and it's also going to be interesting, just like what the Heat offense is just not nearly as much as the Bucks. Like, they just don't have as much of a dynamic score. I'm expecting a bunch of rock fight games where it's like more scores in the 80s and 90s. We don't know. Kyle Lowry's kind of has not really played, but the Struce is always loose. Gabe Vincent has filled in and played nicely. Spoelstra, I think, is the best coach in the league. And it's just going to be a totally different kind of vibe where it's absolutely going to be a defensive battle. But the thing I think the Celtics have struggled with the most, and just I think the hardest defense to go against, as seen as teams that try to play the Celtics, are teams that can switch everything, teams that muck it up like that. And I think the Celtics struggled somewhat in Game 5 when the Bucks started doing that. It's going to be interesting to see how they try and attack that, because, you know, Miami's just not going to leave guys open in the corner. And, you know, also, you know that Spo's going to throw in some nonsense zones in there.
2 years later, at the same time, how scarred are you of the Miami Heat zone defense?
I'm still quite scarred. I'm just waiting for the moment in Game 1 where it really pisses me off, because the Celtics go scoreless for 5 minutes straight because they just don't know how to deal with whatever zone that they put in there. I think the thing that gives you confidence as a Celtics fan, and I think Tatum mentioned this in his post game. I think maybe it was you, the kid, who even asked him about it. Is like, what's changed from this year compared to like the last time he went on a run like this in the bubble? And he's just talked about, I think he focused on like his maturity and just his body and his preparation in that way. But I just think his growth as a playmaker and like the guy you want with the ball in his hands at the end of the game, or even just in going one-on-one against a guy, I think Tatum is just that much better and that much more prepared to kind of be that guy and go up against the Miami defense than he was 2 years ago in the bubble.
Yeah, I think they all are. like Marcus Smart is more willing to pass up the difficult shot. Jaylen Brown is more willing to run the offense. Al Horford is in town, which that
exists.
That could be a really big help, especially against Bam Adebayo. Robert Williams then was like just a bit piece. I think he was behind Enes Kanter in the rotation. So a lot has changed in 2 years. It's just a totally different Celtics team and a totally more physical Celtic. Like 2 years ago, Bam Adebayo kicked the Celtics' ass. Yeah. Like he was just too much for Daniel Theis. He was too much for all of the Celtics. And I don't think he'll be as like he's going to be great in any series just because he's very good. But I don't think he'll have the physical advantage in this series that he did back then. The Celtics are just big and strong everywhere in a way that they just weren't 2 seasons ago. Like it's just a totally different roster.
Not having Kemba is he's kind of a smaller guy who the Celtics were really relying on this series. Now everyone on the roster is just a bit bigger, and it feels like the Celtics are more of a physically tough team. And everyone's just more capable. It's going to be a fascinating series. I do think the Celtics, looking at like early odds, are the favorite in the series. That being said, Miami does have home court. Miami was the best team in the Eastern Conference in the regular season. I don't remember anything that happened in any Celtics-Miami games in the regular season from which to draw any information on. I feel like Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry missed one. But other than that, I just don't remember what happened. You're the journalist. Can there anything we learn from the Celtics Heat regular season matchups at this point?
Probably not. probably not. I do think the Heat, like, they're gonna have to choose like who's in their rotation, because Victor Oladipo kind of emerged during this playoffs as an option. Duncan Robinson has kind of faded out of the rotation. I don't know how much they're going to be able to score against the Celtics if they don't put a lot of shooting on the court. And they can get some of that from Max Strus. They can get some of that from Gabe Vincent. But I do wonder if they'll have to make rotation changes just to get a little bit of space against the Celtics. And especially if Lowry's not right. Because if Lowry's right, that changes things. But if he's still bothered by the hamstring, and they already have Jimmy Butler who doesn't like to shoot threes, and Bam Adebayo who doesn't shoot threes, and like it would just be a lot on their offense to try to score if they don't have a lot of shooting around those guys. But we'll see. That's like the one tactical thing I think Spoelstra will be most challenged by as he looks ahead to this series.
Yeah, and I think the player that's going to be very interesting to me is Tyler Hero, because he is a very dynamic offensive weapon. He is probably their best, if Lowry's hurt, like the guy with the ball in the hands who can like make a play, who you kind of fear the most just in terms of volume shooting and scoring. But he is not great defensively. And if the Heat's offense struggles enough that they kind of need to consistently put Hero out there, that is definitely a switch that I feel like the Celtics are going to hunt, and that you're just trying to get Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown one-on-one going up against him. And I don't know what the best, especially if Lowry's out, what like the best five person lineup is for the Heat right now. And that's just like one of the things that makes the Celtics so good this season, is that like they can have, you can, their best five lineup, whether it's kind of the core three guys and Grant and Horford, or maybe Horford and White, or who knows what they get out of Robert Williams in the series, there can be very strong defensively, but then still able to put up buckets, and there's not like a liability on that end. with the Heat, and I think we saw this a little bit with the Bucks series, and we saw this with the Nets, is like they either have to go with, I think, a more defensive-oriented lineup or a more offensive-oriented lineup, and they don't have as many two-way players as the Celtics, which I think is a huge advantage for the Celtics because they can just play their whoever they deem to be their five best guys. Obviously, this is me being biased after the Celtics winning a Game 7, and maybe my minds will change when the Celtics get blown out in Game 1, but I'm just feeling like whoever they are, their fifth guy or they put out there, or even their fourth or fifth guy they put out there for the Heat after PJ Tucker, Jimmy, and Bam, is just not necessarily like the as talented as the kind of guys the Celtics put out there, as good as Max Strus has been in these playoffs.
That's the death knell for you. I feel like that sentence alone means Max Strus is having like 37 points in Game 1.
He's Max Strus. The Strus is loose. I've liked him ever since he was on the Celtics for what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
He's a solid NBA player. What can I say?
Yeah. He is. I do think it'll be interesting to see. Like, I think it'll be a different series for the Celtics. And I do wonder what their best lineup will be at the end of a game. Like, in this series, obviously, they went small a lot. They went Marcus Smart, Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford. If Robert Williams is back, if he's healthy, then is he in this closing lineup? Is it him and Al Horford in the closing lineup? Is it Grant Williams in the club? Like, I just think they need to solve what the best way to beat the Heat is. And I'm like, it will be a totally different series. Like, it's just a totally different challenge for Udoka. One thing before we totally stop paying attention to Game 7, I thought Udoka's decision to go to the all shooter lineup in early in the second quarter was just a great decision, because the Bucks, obviously, they decided, like, we're going to park Brooke Lopez in the middle of the lane and take away everything that the Celtics get at the rim, and they're going to have to figure out a way to get the other guys to shoot. And Udoka said, all right, well, I'm going to put my five best shooters out there. And it's a move he did during the fourth quarter of, what was it, Game 3 or Game 2 of the Brooklyn series. And that group played like something like 6 minutes all regular season. Maybe not at all in the regular season. Like, it was hardly ever used, F at all, during the regular season. And Udoka pulled it out again in the second quarter. And the Bucks actually took Brooke Lopez out of the game. They brought him back a little later. But it was clear that when he put all the shooters out there, they were kind of like, uh-oh, like, this ain't going to be good for our defense right now. And I just thought that was a nice tactical decision by him to take what the game was giving him. You don't usually say that about coaches, but he just decided, okay, they're going to turn guys into shooters. Like, let's fucking put all 40%+ shooters except Al Horford out there. And, like, good luck guarding those guys, basically, is what he said. And I just thought that was probably a turning point in the game. Like, that was when they started to take control in the second quarter. And I just felt that was a really good move.
Yeah, and that kind of forced – that opened up some shots for Tatum, who just, like, they put Giannis in a drop and Tatum knocked down some threes. But I thought the Celtics did a good job of not, like, settling for threes there. Peyton Pritchard had that really nice play where – they basically were, I felt like they were running just to try to attack a switch with Tatum, and they basically just doubled Tatum and let Pritchard drive to the rim, and he had that nice dump off to Al Horford for the dunk. It was just like a really, like, solid stretch there for the Celtics, and it is when they kind of took over. And just looking over my notes now, wild end to that first half with Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown going for the shot probably 15 seconds before he should have. It completely just working out for the Celtics because Marcus Smart comes up with a ridiculous steal and gets fouled on the three-pointer.
I couldn't believe that. That was such a dumb shot by Jaylen Brown. Just the timing of it. It was like a 1.5 second differential on the shot clock in the game clock. And he took a shot with like 8 seconds left. And it should have really haunted the Celtics. And instead, Marcus Smart just said, give me that. And not only that, but they called it a shooting foul, which is, like, isn't that the call that they haven't called all season and the call that they didn't give him in game three at the end of it? But they gave it to him. They gave it to him. I was surprised by that
one. I thought he was shooting, but I mean, like, they finished the half up five where they easily, if Marcus Smart doesn't get that steal, it could have been a 45-45 game and just like a lot different. But then they really just like came out at the start of the third quarter. It was like Jaylen Brown mid-range shot, Grant Williams a wide open corner three, Jason Tatum wide open corner three, Jaylen Brown just three, and it's like boom, 2 minutes, 11-4 run. This lead is now 12, and it really wasn't close after that. And so
I felt like they did a great job of attacking Milwaukee's defensive strategy during that. Like, they went into halftime and decided, okay, if Brook Lopez is laying off Grant Williams, this is what we're going to do. And like the first possession, they got a wide open three because they put Grant Williams into the pick and roll instead of what would normally be Al Horford. And I think it was Tatum who hit the first three. And it was because they decided, okay, if Brook Lopez is going to lay off him, let's put Grant Williams in the screening action. I just thought Udoka was really good. And like, he was great during that series. That was a big time performance from Ime Udoka. We didn't know what he was going to be like as a playoff coach. Welcome to the big leagues, man. Like, you deserve to be there. That was, I thought he pulled a lot of the right decisions throughout the series. And obviously he had more options than Budenholzer. Like, it was just easier for Ime Udoka to make good adjustments because he had more of them to choose from. But I did feel like that the beginning of that third quarter was kind of the Celtics saying, we saw what you did during the first half. If you keep doing that, we're going to mutilate it. And they did.
They absolutely did. Did you see Bud falling on the ground after he, there's an offensive foul called on George Hill?
I did not, actually.
he was so upset. He just actually rolled around on the ground. Another thing that I thought Ime did well, this just has done well during this playoffs. And it's really in contrast to what Brad Stevens used to do as a coach. Brad Stevens would only just praise the other team entirely and just talk about how good they are. Ime is not the same.
Ime
talks shit. It's not like it's Wilt Chamberlain out there. Or just like, he's like, yeah, we could get that shot whenever we wanted. Ime is very confident. And I feel like it definitely, I don't see how the coach, like the team doesn't follow that. But I've just liked his, just Ime's willingness to be hard, Ime, but like the Celtics are backing it up. It's been fantastic in the playoffs. He's been a great quote so far.
Yeah. And I mean, he really does talk shit. Like,
he really does. He like says exact, like, but it's like so matter of fact that it doesn't feel like that controversial. He's just like, yeah, no, the Celtics can get whatever shot they want at any time.
Yeah. I thought it was funny because I tweeted out the quote he had when people were asking him about the Robert Williams bone bruise. And it was Brian Windhorst asked him, like, was that the play when Robert Williams ran into Giannis? And Ime was totally matter of fact, like, no, Giannis ran into Robert Williams. And I just tweeted out the quote. And I think Bucks fans thought Ime was like saying that Giannis had made a dirty play or something or whatever. And people were just furious, but it was just matter of fact, Ime, like, nah, bro, that was Giannis running into him. And he just speaks the truth. He'll let you know, like, we're trying to go at Grayson Allen and George Hill and shit. We're trying to go at Bobby Portis on the perimeter. And he's not bashful about saying that stuff, which is all normally unspoken truths. Like both teams know what the weak links are, who you're going after. It's nothing like it's no state secret, but email just say it. It does crack me up.
It's just it's such a wild change from the Brad Stevens era. It is pushing. We're close to 1 a.m. and I'm feeling my my focus dwindling quickly. But I just have to bring up the fact that the Phoenix Suns got just absolutely the doors blown off them tonight in a game 7. It's just wild. I don't know how that happened, but Luka had 27 points at the half and the Phoenix Sun had 27 points at the half. I know you were probably writing your story and didn't get to watch that game, but
I had it on while I was writing my story.
Wild.
It was insane. Like,
just so how do you react that way in a game 7?
How do you score 27 points, the same amount as Luka Doncic, as a team in the first half of game 7? You won 66 games. You reached the finals last year. It was a stunning, stunning game. Like I could not have been more stunned. And from a Celtics perspective, are they the favorites now?
I feel like they kind of might be. And it feels like they've been really, I don't know, lucky now, but like obviously the Bucks not having Chris Middleton in the series works out in favor of the Celtics. I think they would have to be the favorites just because of what they're... Is Jason Tate... I guess... Most people would probably pick Luka Doncic if you're just going to the best player right now. But if I'm... I know you... It's one of your favorite debates of two-way players or not. Like, I think Jason Tatum makes much more of an impact on defense than Luka Doncic does. But given the Celtics' combination of star power in Tatum and then the rest of the infrastructure and the kind of team defense around it, it feels like the Celtics would be probably the betting favorite to win the NBA championship right now, which is kind of wild just considering the turnaround they've had this season, not what you would expected 5 months ago.
538 has the Celtics with a 51% chance of winning the finals. I just looked that up right now.
Well, I mean, the computers love the Boston Celtics, but yeah, I think like they have, once they have now taken down the Bucks, I think they absolutely, they have a legitimate chance at winning the NBA championship.
And the Suns going out, I think, helps that too, because,
yeah,
but maybe not. I mean, the Mavs just put on a powerhouse clinic, and the Mavericks are sort of, I mean, not exactly, but they're sort of built like the Celtics, where they have the one superstar and then just an awesome team defense. Like, they are really tough to score on. And when you combine that with Luka and then you add in Jalen Brunson and Spencer Dinwiddie, who can make plays too, like, it takes a lot to score against them. And then they have Luka. But...
And
the Warriors obviously have a lot of like those guys have been there. The three guys, not everybody else, but the three guys have been there. But yeah, I feel like the Celtics, and that's why I felt like this game 7 was so big. I think it was the biggest game since Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett played LeBron James in game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals in 2012. I think it was the biggest game at TD Garden.
Oh, absolutely.
You think absolutely? Even though...
Definitely.
Like, you could say...
Because I think the
Conference Finals against 2018 against LeBron and the Cavs. But game 7 of that Conference Finals. But even if they win that game and make the finals, like, the Warriors were just going to just destroy them.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing, is that like this game felt much more important because the Celtics have clear championship aspirations and clear, like, a realistic chance. I feel like that team with in 2018 was just going to get absolutely stomped by the Warriors, although you never know in those things. And like the Isaiah team the year before, Obviously Isaiah got hurt and then it's just like, wasn't, there weren't as big games. So like, this feels like the most of like, oh, this team can really go somewhere. It's very, very important that they win this game. So it's definitely going to be interesting moving forward. The only other thing, the back to the Mavericks point, is like the one kind of big loss that the Celtics had this year in like the, in 2022, other than the famous O'Shea Brissett game, was the Mavericks coming into TD Garden and having that, was it Dinwiddie at the buzzer? Like they played just a phenomenal game on defense and really slowed down a surging Celtics team. So that is me getting wildly ahead of myself and completely overlooking the Eastern Conference and the Miami Heat, which we should not do because the Miami Heat are a very solid basketball team and it's going to be an absolute dogfight here in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I don't know. I've run out of steam. I've run out of things to say. We've been going for an hour here. The Celtics won game 7. They have a chance at the championship. I don't know what else to talk about, Jay. Is the Eastern Conference final? Is the Eastern Conference finals potable?
If you say it right. If you say it right, yeah, it's potable. Pronounce that shit.
The Eastern Conference finals are potable.
Anything is potable.
Anything is potable. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back after game 1. Figure this all out. But tune in then.